I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shock the world. Shock the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Thursday, February 7th, 2019. We are officially one less than a month away from the Pids kicking off their 2019 campaign, a home Saturday game against the Portland Timbers. It has been snowing here in Colorado. My brain is completely fried from getting a whole bunch of reports out, so I am ready to decompress with some soccer. Rabbi Mark Goodman, are you done thawing, or the White Walkers still descending upon you?
The White Walkers. It's nice here, actually. It was 60 degrees today. I mean, it's raining. It's been raining nonstop for 2 days, but that's just normal for Pittsburgh. We don't have a vortex. We have the opposite. Whatever the heck happened, like, it was like the warm front that was behind the super cold front that caused the Arctic air to come down. I'm not a meteorologist. I don't know about these things. Ask Chris Bianchi. But basically, like, we've gotten really nice weather, but I think we're supposed to get the junk that you've got soon. So, there goes my weekend, but oh well. Good times.
Good stuff. Okay, I've got a fun little banter topic that I was kind of thinking about today, Mark. I don't know how much of a basketball guy you are, but anybody who is an NBA fan is aware that today, as of recording, was the trade deadline for the NBA from the end of the regular season. And all of the hullabaloo was about whether or not Anthony Davis, the big star center for the New Orleans Pelicans, who will have 1 year on his contract after the end of this season, whether or not he was going to be traded. And there was a whole bunch of back and forth with the Lakers and multiple tampering fines from people on both sides. And there's been rumblings about whether or not he'd be interested in going and joining the Boston Celtics in the offseason. And then reportedly he also said he was open to a trade with the Milwaukee Bucks, who have kind of become a new dark horse out of nowhere threat in the Eastern Conference. And so LeBron James, being the very crafty social media messaging guy that he is, not unlike, you know, a Zlatan Ibrahimovic, or I'd say Jose Mourinho when things are going well, Mark, posted something essentially saying, you know, when a franchise chooses to move on from a player, it's they're doing it for business, they're doing it for rebuilding, or for the good of the team as a whole. And in his mind, fans tend to be a little bit more accepting of those particular cases. You know, if you trade away a star player, or if you don't bring a guy back if he's 1 year over the hill because you don't want to have to overpay him for something that's not going to be as good as he used to be. And then on the other side, when a player either demands a trade or in free agency decides to leave, like LeBron has done on multiple cases, or reportedly what Anthony Davis did in the past week, you know, that's them giving up on the franchise. That's them giving up on the team. You know, that's them turning their back on the fans, as opposed to what they might see as pursuing a better option from a winning standpoint, choosing more money to be stabler from a financial standpoint. You know, an MLS player deciding, you know, I don't want to have to live in Columbus anymore. Let me go live in Orlando where it's warm, so to speak. And, you know, I kind of see that, you know, are we, you know, would you judge Cristiano Ronaldo for openly discussing all of his frustrations with how things were going at Real Madrid and him not being respected in the way that he wanted to, and then choosing to leave for Juventus? Or, you know, do you particularly judge, you know, another player who just likes to hop from major club to major club, or, you know, Chelsea or Manchester United, who seem to be burning through major star players regularly? And are we really that shocked that, if Mo Salah and Kevin De Bruyne go to different clubs, immediately become starters and are now having success with their team, is that not an indictment of the environment that they were in with Chelsea? Mark, in a soccer context or generally a sports context, how do you view and judge teams making decisions that are the best for them, but maybe doing a player dirty, and vice versa in terms of comparing those two, and, you know, making sense of that decision in the context of them turning their back on you potentially as someone who cares about the Colorado Rapids?
Well, it's a great question. I think we've had this conversation in a different way at some point in the many, many moons of this podcast, because we're, what, you know, we've done this for like 59, this is like our 59th podcast or something like that.
Yeah, we're into a calendar week as of last week, or between last show and this show, I believe we've officially hit a full calendar year on the podcast. So
like 50.
Happy birthday, HTHL!
Woohoo! So, it's for me, it's like a metaphysical question. It's like it's a broader question than sports. And it really has to do, it's really about generations, you know, like the quote unquote greatest generation was the generation where, you know, you got a job at the plant and when you were done 50 years later, they gave you a gold watch and a special speech. And then the boomers were the first generation where you hopped around a little bit. Like my mom was at the same job basically for her whole career, 37 years, but my dad worked for more than a dozen different companies in the same industry because there was no loyalty. And I've already worked, I'm only 12 years into my career as a rabbi and I'm on my third basically institution. And it's mutual. It's neither the institution nor the individual feels a sense of fealty to their employees / employers. So I feel like that is a global phenomenon in America and it definitely extends to sports. And it definitely, it should extend to the way fans feel about players. I don't know a lot of fans today who feel like, oh, my favorite player left my favorite team. What a backstabber. He's a terrible person. I mean, I know I've read some think pieces about how, you know, LeBron is really like ruining things because he keeps hopping from team to team, or, you know, a player like Rajon Rondo is, you know, getting bounced around from team to team because, you know, they don't want to hang on to him. But like, I can't get upset about it. You know, if you can make a decent wage, or if you're in an industry where, those are kind of the rules of the game, then that's the deal. I think the only time I feel bad about it is like, I think MLS is complicated in the sense that like, if you're on the market in the rest of the world in soccer, you have to agree to leave your team. And there is no such thing as being traded for another player. Right. So if trying to think of a good player in Europe that may be on the move, but like Mo Salah was your example before, like if Liverpool decided that what was best for their team was to, you know, sell Mo Salah, and Mo Salah decided he didn't want to come to terms with Barcelona because Barcelona wasn't going to pay him enough, or he didn't really want to go to Barcelona, then he can scuttle the deal straight up. And Major League Soccer is not like that. You can swap a guy, you know, across the league. Now, that being said, like, there is one caveat to that, which is like a disgruntled player, a player who's unhappy, who says, I want out. There's nothing you can do about that as a team. You basically have to honor that player. You have to say, okay, you know, like it hurts us and it's not good, but you know, we know you don't want to play here. We're not going to make you be miserable. I mean, the Rapids have experienced that twice in the last couple of years. Once with Stefan Agner, which we're not going to talk about anymore. And the other one was with Mohamed Saeed. And Saeed was under contract for 2 years, but apparently he wasn't super happy for some reason and he wanted to go home. So he went back to Scandinavia. And then 3 or 4 years ago, Jose Mari, who was from La Liga, he also had that. He was on a 2-year deal and after he was great for the Rapids. And after a year, he said, I'm homesick. I want to go back to Spain. And then he went back and played in first division La Liga, which is pretty damn cool. So yeah, I think it's okay. I think it's okay to want out. I think it's okay to swap players around.
I think there's a little bit of a dichotomy in this. I agree with you that the open market and just how much control that, you know, a player has in world football about their fate, you know, gives them a different lens to view it compared to all of the other franchise-based leagues in the United States and Canada where, you know, outside of maybe winning an Olympic gold medal, there's nothing you can do in hockey that's better than going to the NHL and competing for the Stanley Cup. And we could could say the same thing about the NBA, obviously the NFL as well. But in all of those, you have to be drafted, you know, with the exception of the MLS Super Draft. You know, everybody's a homegrown player or a youth player who either got released or signed on the dotted line or took a trial as somewhere else opportunity. But that was something that ultimately they had some level of control on, or they could say, you know, decide that they didn't want it to happen. You know, in what other industry, you know, does the Stanford kid who's building his own app, you know, get drafted by Best Buy to go work in tech support rather than getting to walk into the Google office with a six-figure salary? So, you know, in that aspect of it is different, but at the same time, you know, there's only 30 to 32 teams in the NBAs, for example. So, you know, how many of those can you spurn with demanding a trade before you immediately get cut from the league, or you just develop a reputation where nobody, where you're not going to have any bartering power, where, you know, potentially there's a player in MLS who could hop, skip, and jump to Asia or Europe or somewhere else where no one really, you know, even someone who's digging through the weeds to try and find all the skeletons in their closet is going to have as good of an understanding of their rapport or how they handle themselves, such that, you know, maybe you can completely shuffle the deck and start fresh in ways that you can't really do it with the franchise American-based sports. So I think players should have as much right to do it. I guess the one thing that I will add to that, Mark, is just from a sentimental standpoint, you know, I think it would be a really bad move, and I think it would really, you know, leave a bad taste in mouth for a lot of people if Dylan Cerna, like, spontaneously just said, you know, hey, I went out, like, screw Colorado, you know, no more Colorado for life, like, trade me to RSL, I'm gonna go win the Rocky Mountain Cup against you guys. Yeah. I don't know that there's a whole lot of good examples with that, just given how new the homegrown system is, you know, the sentimentality that Rapids fans, and I would say pretty much every fan base in MLS has for their homegrowns. You know, we've yet to see, you know, a homegrown, you know, really, like, sit out a contract or something like that, or, you know, start a really stir standpoint. But I think just given maybe the sentimental attachments that MLS fans, that might be the one situation where people are going to be a little bit upset. You know, I think everybody was, maybe some people emotionally didn't like it, but understood the business side of it and were happy with the Kellen Acosta, Dominic Baggi trade. I think most of the fan base, and, you know, if we were to poll our audience right now listening to this episode, I'd say at least 90% would say it was understandable and best for all parties involved for Marlon Hairston to go to the Houston Dynamo. I don't know that the Rapids have really burned any players who didn't really deserve it, and other than the ones you've mentioned, I don't know that anybody's really turned their back on the burgundy and blue, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's well said. There is such a thing as a heel turn in sports. Like, it's one thing to go to the highest bidder and go get paid while you have your very brief career as an athlete. It's another thing to, you know, do the worst possible thing to your own team and go to a rival, and be a jerk about it. So don't do that.
Let's move on, Mark. The Colorado Rapids this past Saturday, folks, actually played a game, and we know almost nothing about it. The Colorado Rapids down in Florida played MLS expansion team FC Cincinnati. That was a 1-0 loss. Hybrid lineups, and I would say, you know, a borderline full line change at halftime for both squads. A lot of trialists, a lot of guys who didn't officially have contracts. Obviously, the Rapids sorting out things with a couple of the academy players who they still have in camp with them out in Chula Vista, California. And then obviously FC Cincinnati, who, I don't know if you saw this week, Mark, but they signed all five of the guys they selected in the Super Draft.
Nice.
And then proceeded to loan out two of them to USL outlets. So, you know, I hesitate to do good thing, bad thing, big thing. One of my policies on me doing a recap or a follow-up, you know, three thoughts article on any individual game of is if I'm not really well versed in it, if I didn't see a whole half, or if I don't have really good highlights or anything like that, I tend to not do a recap. And this is one of those cases where, you know, I don't even, you know, even if I'm just stating the facts of what we know from what the two teams tweeted out, I'm not sure I could get to 300 words on this. I mean, do we have anything to say about this friendly? Does it matter at all? Do we care?
I mean, we lost 1-0. Is that what happened?
Yes, that was the result.
And there was little to no information put out by the team about how exactly that happened. And we know who was on the who played the first half and who played the second half. And that's
correct.
About
yes, right. And that's
right. And the lineups were, I mean, the interesting thing, I guess, if you were going to talk about this game at all, which I will now, was that the lineups were interesting and that they mixed a lot of, you know, young players and trialists. And, you know, there wasn't really like a first half was the first team and the second half the second team. No, it was a big mix. but we can't take anything from it. Like, absolutely. Also because we didn't see it. Because the team didn't. I think if we're going to talk about anything, Matt, I think it's worthwhile asking a question of why does the team keep not broadcasting their first game or two or three? Like, yes, I get that, like, it's probably not very good. And they don't want to be embarrassed by throwing up bad soccer online. But like you and I, you know, and probably about 1,000 of their fans are starving for soccer, one. And two, like it smacks of laziness. And that's the other thing is that like, and I hate to call out the Rapids digital team or whatever, but like, because they're hardworking guys and I know them and they do good work. And I'm sure it's not at their level that the decision was made. I'm sure it's somebody else's, but like, you know, I have been to, coffee shop lectures and, sideline soccer games and, you know, pre-K ballerina practices where with the tap of your finger about 8 times on a damn thing, you can throw up a Facebook Live of almost anything. Like, it's so unbelievably easy to broadcast an event. So why wouldn't you? You know, like, what are they practicing secret formations that, you know, other opposing teams in the Western Conference would master their formations and destroy it? Like, it's not, I don't get it. So that's my question, Matt. What do you think? Like, is there any good reason to keep these games under wraps?
This is a fascinating aspect of, like, if there's anything that in reality doesn't matter at all from an actual outcome in terms of at the gates or in terms of actual results on the field, but I think has so much room for, you know, low cost of investment, time and energy to put in for an extremely beneficial return on investment of PR and interest in social media and just clicks and likes and retweets and everything. It's what teams are doing in the preseason. You know, 3-4 years ago, you couldn't get anything, you know, and I would say this across league wide, like you were lucky if in a scrimmage you got a starting 11 and a score line. You like there are absolutely no highlights, no quotes about anything. And obviously it's a little bit easier for the team to keep things up under wraps because, you know, with the exception of about a week and change or so for the entire preseason, they haven't been in Colorado. So for people like you and me, it's even harder to get stuff. And at least, you know, it's also harder to, because there's no training events to occur. There's no after training press media availability. And then if you are handling something, you know, you're dealing with time zones and phone connections and Skype, as we saw, you know, with the interview pod that we've had, the interview segments that we've had the last couple weeks. So from a media standpoint, it's an absolute drain because basically you're going off of press releases and little whispers in order to try and create content when, you know, if this was spring training, you know, the Denver Post can put out an article a day on what the Rockies are doing as soon as pitchers and catchers arrive in Arizona or wherever it is they are. Obviously, with NFL preseason, it's all depth charts and who's playing in the preseason games and whether or not that matters. But, like, there's content to put out, but it's almost – and this isn't a Rapids issue. This is MLS, I would say, league-wide and every single individual team of there's an absolute devoid of there's almost an intentional effort to put out as little information as possible. And I'm not really sure where that's coming from. You know, I think if you asked Hudson, you know, if I asked Hudson, you know, with the, you know, with the Wonder Woman, you know, truth-telling, you know, whip, for example, you know, it's like, why aren't you revealing any of this stuff? You know, he would say it's a competitive advantage. We don't want people to see what we're planning, maybe what I'm instituting from a tactical standpoint. But I mean, everybody's experimenting at this point, you know, like Toronto FC is doing absolutely crazy stuff. You know, Seattle Sounders put out an academy team and got destroyed by Atlanta's first team the last couple weeks. Like, nobody's fit. A lot of people aren't healthy. Nobody has their rosters settled out. Like, if you're really, you know, who's going to dig through 90 minutes of a 1-0 loss friendly against an MLS expansion team in order to get one little tidbit of information on one of the Rapids' new academy players that might barely become relevant 2 years from now?
Yep.
No. So I agree with you that, you know, from our standpoint, we are starved for media access in order to create content. And, you know, obviously, I don't need to look any further than to scroll on Twitter with hashtag Rapids96, you know, in the first, you know, within 10 minutes plus or minus the scheduled start time for the FC Cincinnati game. And there's a bunch of people who are trying to look for a stream of the game. So, I mean, you know, if that's not an indication that there's demand for it, there's a hunger for it, and, you know, that MLS teams, like, people want to consume your content because they're interested in it, and maybe providing that content will have people more interested in it, and then more access will make them more likely to consume it in ways that benefit you financially. So maybe that's our big thing from this game, Mark, is that we couldn't see it and that teams should do a better job of making this stuff available.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, like, it's just early. And there's a lot of they're getting ramped up and they want to get the kinks out. I can see that, you know. So maybe they should just call it a scrimmage. But yeah, I mean, or really basically be like, yeah, we're not telling you anything about this game. We're not telling you the opening lineups. You just need to pretend like it didn't happen. Because they kind of did that a couple years ago. They had a team come in from Korea, I think. And they just really said nothing about it. You know, they showed one video or something like that, of Jan Ekra from Charlotte just scoring a golazo. And I was super excited and I was like, Jan Ekra needs to make the team. And I don't even think Jan Ekra is playing soccer anymore. But, anyway, so yeah, I get the idea of not to try and get us too excited too early, but you and I, Matt, we get excited too early.
Let's round out the formalities in terms of the Rapids preseason. This coming Saturday, February 9th at 1 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Mark. The Rapids will take on Ventura County Fusion. I believe an NPSL team, question mark. So they'll be playing them on Saturday, yes, and then on Tuesday at the Chula Vista Elite Training Center where they've been, since the beginning of this week. They'll be taking on Toronto FC, who are Juvinko-less and obviously prepping for CONCACAF Champions League. And then they'll be doing their friendly, on their double header friendly, I assume, a split squad game, on Saturday the 16th, at Las Vegas, with tickets available, I believe, for one of those games, if not both. Then we'll be doing a similar two-segment with the LA Galaxy, and then back to Colorado on the 25th of this month in anticipation for their March 2nd home debut to start the season. So, you know, maybe at that point we'll get a stream, or at the very least there'll be people who will be able to go to the game, and then maybe there'll be more stuff for us to actually talk about and maybe actually do a good thing, bad thing, big thing ahead of the regular season kicking off.
Ventura County Fusion are a USL League 2 team, formerly USL PDL, but so points off, Matt. Points off.
Okay, I'm sorry I don't know the League 2, so they're fourth tier in this one? Okay.
Fourth tier.
Mark, I feel like all of my obsessive and completely useless knowledge of Grimsby Town has to at least make that a wash, if not a net positive for me. But sure. I digress. Let's round things out with some injury news. The club has actually come out with some injury news about preseason, Mark. We know from back in the middle of December and the part of the offseason, Courtney Ford had a calf sprain and a bone bruise that was going to keep him out for about 2 months. Presumably, he'll be back out of that by the time we next do a podcast. Kai Kamara had a pulmonary contusion back on January 16th. That was about a month to 6 weeks out. And then just in the last couple of weeks, you have Sam Nicholson with another back issue, a lumbar spine stress fracture. I defer to anybody who has any knowledge of anatomy and human physiology on what that means in any detail. And then Sam Vines got a quad strain earlier this week. I should say, based on the timetable for all of these injuries, all of these are going to be done by the end of the month. So presumably players will be back in training and in theory available for selection potentially for that game on March 2nd against the Portland Timbers. Mark, do we have any thoughts on these injuries, how they're impacting preseason? You know, I guess it's four players who we would hope would be in the 18 regularly for this year. So maybe that's bad.
They all sound like good, solid early season injuries in the sense that like none of these is really anything to get worried about. They're bumps and bruises. They're pulled muscle type things. I mean, the one to be concerned about is Sam Nicholson because it's the same kind of injury that basically kept him on the shelf for most of the end of last year. But another way to spin it is, well, he's still recovering from the injury from last year. It takes time. The other thing about Sam is that, to be quite blunt and honest, he's been like essentially replaced at his position. There's not a lot of room for Sam Nicholson to get back into this squad, which is kind of a good thing. If he gets fully healthy, then he's going to be trying out to be the first guy off the bench at striker, or the first guy off the bench to kind of be the underneath number 10 type guy. So that's the only thing to worry about. But, and I don't like the idea that, you know, I should say, if Sam never gets healthy, it's no big deal because we don't really need him anyways. Like, we need everybody we've got. We need every player to be as good as they possibly can be. So, that's the only place I'd say that, you know, your heart skips a beat.
I'm maybe a little bit concerned about Sam Bynes because, as news we'll get to in a minute, I'm still probably my biggest question mark or my biggest concern in terms of having reliable options or depth options or a starter or room for flexibility is right now at that left back position. You know, we've talked ad nauseum about what the Rapids are going to do from a forward spot, what they're going to do with that other number eight spot, or the total football diamond, if you will, in the midfield. But at the end of the day, the Rapids have options. You know, if Johan Blomberg is the fourth best starting midfielder in that midfield diamond of Benny Fehlhaber, Kai Kamara, and Jack Price, I'm not that worried about it. But the Rapids came into the season last year, and the right back position was basically Marlon Hairston or bust. And when Marlon Hairston didn't work out, they tried a whole bunch of stuff, and none of it really worked. And right now, at best, I think you have 2 to 3 question marks as far as the option at the left back position. So Sam Bynes getting hurt, not really something, you know, that's not something the Rapids need right now, given the position that he plays. Let's move on to some other news and notes. The Rapids did release other additions in addition to their roster that they have as of right now. Also, the other players who are available in training, the short and sweet of which, Mark, is the academy players are still there, and everybody with the exception of Jacob Hauser-Ramsey, the super draft pick, the defender, are no longer with the team. So there's no other super draft picks who the Rapids made. Shinyashiki is already signed. Hauser-Ramsey's with the squad. Marcelo Borges, who was the left back, who we had kind of hyped up a little bit after seeing some of his highlight videos from the combine, no longer with the club. Robbie Mertz, no longer with the club. And then Encho, no longer with the club as well. So it's the academy kids, it's Hauser-Ramsey. On the official press release, the Rapids have Kofi Opare as invited to train, but not officially in training. So I guess Kofi Opare is ghosting the Rapids as we speak.
Yeah, Enoch Mushagalusa was the other guy that you mentioned, just to show off my ability to actually pronounce his last name. But I didn't think he had a high chance of signing with the team. I think they were just giving him an opportunity to say, you know, I was on trial with the Colorado Rapids. That should count for something for other teams. And now other teams should want to. I mean, basically, they were doing a solid for an academy player by giving him a shot so that his agent can shop him around the country and say, hey, you want this guy. He was almost a Colorado Rapid 15 minutes ago. You know, I wonder how big a deal that is for USL teams, but you know, USL is actually fairly big this year, and there are a lot of teams out there that need to start rounding out their rosters. I'm very plugged in at the lower leagues now. There are still 12 spots on the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and Loudoun United, which is the farm team for DC United. They haven't signed a single player, Matt. They have an entire 20.
When does preseason start for USL normally, and when are they kicking off the regular season?
Preseason for the Riverhounds started on Monday. It's been going for 4 days, and their first exhibition match is tomorrow. So I don't know what Loudoun is doing, and nobody else does either. It's a bit of a mystery.
Okay, I guess technically, if you're not fielding a squad, those are technically forfeits, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess. I don't know. They've got the first game doesn't kick off till March 16th, so they've got time. But
yeah,
you know
what I'm saying? If an MLS team comes out and says, we don't have anybody on the bench, we only have 10 starters, are they allowed to just play a man down with no subs?
Yeah, totally. I think the minimum in soccer has always been 7, right? Even if you – but I don't know that – that's a good question. If someone should look this up. This is ask HTHL in reverse, because we don't know the answer to this, but like, if you start the game and you're like, yo, we only got 7 guys. Actually, I kind of know the answer to that. I actually do know the answer to that. I wrote an article about it a number of years ago. a number of years ago in the Colorado Premier League, there was this whole thing where the Colorado Premier League had a team in it, the Colorado Rush, that also joined up with UPSL. And they were in a weird situation in which they had qualified for U.S. Open Cup as a Colorado Premier League team. And the rules of U.S. Open Cup state that you got to come with the guy that brung you, right? So they had to stay in the Colorado Premier League in order to be in U.S. Open Cup. But they weren't really in the CPL. So they had to field teams in both leagues. So they fielded a good team for UPSL, and then for Colorado Premier League, for the first couple weeks of the season, they sent out a skeleton crew. And the first game of the season, they literally sent 7 guys, the absolute bare minimum, and they lost that game like 20-0. It might have been 9 guys, but I feel like it was 7, but they literally sent the absolute minimum number of players. They had no bench, and that was that. And I wrote an article about it and it became a scandal. So, so I know the answer to that question. It's either 7 or 9.
Okay. So I can't fill out the paperwork to become a Colorado Premier League team and then just like walk out there as like me, Matt Pollard FC. And like, I can't just play a game single-handedly against 11 other guys. Not saying that I would do that or that would be successful, but like per the rule of the law, like I'm going to have to get Richard Terry and then get you on a flight and then a few other people to try and get that out.
I like the idea of Matt Pollard FC, which is just a ginger guy in a ginger kit with ginger shorts and bright red shoes. That would be Matt Pollard FC.
Yeah. Okay. I think that covers it as far as all the stuff going on in preseason. Like I said, we can't really have a From Field 20 because the Rapids are not on Field 20, and they're actually they won't be back in Colorado until the week of the season starting off. There is one sort of roster news to note that I want to talk about right now. Obviously, there's been a lot of rumblings and questions about Atlanta United and then LA Galaxy giving their offseason moves that have been incomplete. Al Marone, you know, got sold to Newcastle United. Prior to that, Atlanta United had 4 DPs on their roster, and the LA Galaxy still technically have 4 designated players, and there's a lot of rumblings about whether or not they're going to buy out Gio or restructure one of the contracts from somebody else. I shall say to all the people freaking out about any of that, their MLS team, Rapids or otherwise, you do not have to be roster compliant right now. There is a roster compliance deadline for the beginning of the season, but right now it's okay to have 4 or 10 designated players or an X number of international spots or players who are signed that are over the number of roster spots you have at a particular position. But the one thing that where the Rapids, other than maybe the money, because we don't have news on some of the new player signings and their salaries, Mark, are right now, as it was based on the international status of players in 2018, the Rapids are short 2 international slots. So they've got 2 players over the international roster slot limit, so they either need to get rid of 2 of those players, acquire 2 international roster spots, any combination of those that adds up to 2, or potentially, as we saw last season, 2 players need to get some form of domestic status, i.e. the internationals need to get their green card. Is this something that you are thinking about, something that you are worried about, and how do you think the Rapids are going to go about getting roster compliant as it relates to their international slots?
That is a really good question. I don't worry about these things. We have a couple of Super Rapids fans and writers who do worry about these things. Jason Maxwell is absolutely obsessed with international slots, and I love him because he's fascinated with it, but it's not something I worry about because it all works out in the end. I think it's a bigger problem to worry about a team like the LA Galaxy, who have 4 DPs. You know, that's a problem. They're going to figure that out. I'm not super worried about it, but, I don't feel for the LA Galaxy anyways, being that I'm a Rapids fan, but, I think that there's not there's nothing really to worry about. So the question with the Rapids is, how do they best do it? You kind of threw out the most likely scenario, which is that the team is going to either buy some extra slots, or that they're going to do some green card magic and get a couple of players their green cards. The international players right now are Blomberg, Boley, Gashi, Nicholson, Price, Smith, and Wilson. Of those players, Price, Smith, Wilson, and Nicholson all pretty much just came to the country, so they're not going to be eligible. Boley's gone, so I'm sorry, I'm listing last year's players. So clearly Blomberg and Gashi would have the possibility of getting green cards because they've been around a little bit. And then the other possibility, I suppose, would be Shinyashiki because he has been a college student for 4 years. So that's kind of green card paperwork that should be able to be done. And Matt, who's the other international that I'm missing?
Isn't Jack Price an international?
Yeah, I mentioned him. I don't think he's, so that's kind of, Kai Kamara's not an international, right?
Yes, he got his, he got a citizenship when he was at Columbus, I believe.
Right, and Mesquita? Yeah.
I'm not sure, I don't know about Mesquita just because all of his playing in MLS was technically in Canada.
Huh, alright, so, anyhow, so I think, you know, I've got my favorites for ways of maybe getting green cards for players, but, you know, if they have to pay $175,000 for a spot, they'll pay $175,000 for a spot. What do you think?
Well, I think that there's, you know, as someone who is in no way an immigration attorney at all, you know, there's precedent based on moves in MLS in general and that the Rapids have done in the past that at least one or two of these guys, there's a way to finagle to get them a green card, at some point before the start of the season, as we saw last year with Eigner. And then I believe Nana Boateng also got his green card then. So, I mean, I'm sure that's a possibility. And then for those who are wondering, depending on the time of the year and the teams and what other assets that are going on, generally speaking, an international slot in 2018 was worth between a little over $100,000 and a little under $200,000 in allocation money, some combination of GAM and TAM. And that varied from, you know, $100,000 worth of 2018 general allocation money and then $75,000 of 2019 targeted allocation money. So that's generally what the going rate for it was right now. I have a sense based on just teams locking them up with their international roster spots that that price is going to go up, as has been the trend. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, these things were worth $50,000 to $100,000 at the absolute max. But, you know, the Rapids have room to finagle that if they absolutely have to, if they have to loan down an academy kid to free up a little bit of space to then use some GAM. You know, there's definite flexibility to do with it. It's something to keep an eye on. It's something that I'm curious to see how the Rapids go about doing it, given their history of how they've tried to be roster compliant with international roster spot. But I mean, if this is, you know, if we're on the DEFCON sale, Mark, you know, we're at DEFCON 5, and if DEFCON 6 was allowed to exist, I would be at DEFCON 6 on this one. Like, I'm in no way worried about the Rapids having I am more worried about Anthony Hudson deciding, you know what, we're just going to throw out Cole Bassett on his own and see how he does against Diego Valeri and the Timbers. I'm more worried about the Rapids forfeiting a game by just putting a one-man team out there than I am with them not having enough international roster slots.
Yeah, the word you used before was finagle. And if LA, if the LA Galaxy can basically, you know, the LA Galaxy invented the DP clause for David Beckham. Then they went out and they basically forced the league to add a second DP because they wanted one, right? I pretty much think at this point, like, you know, if they don't figure out a way to pay down Giovanni Dos Santos, they're just going to call up Don Garber and be like, yo, Donnie, what do we need to do to get that fourth DP slot that we've been talking about as a league? And Donnie will make it happen. So if you can do that, you can do anything with a few strokes of a pen and some magic dust.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on, Mark. We're gonna finish out the show with a full slate of hashtag AskHTHLs because we've got a bunch of them and they're really, really good, Mark. So we're going to start with the 9607 MLS pod. They asked us, which of the Rapids new acquisitions are you most excited for? Are there any you are not happy with? Mark, give me the newest since the season ended, your favorite Rapid signing and your least favorite Rapid signing.
Let's see. Favorite Rapid signing. Are we considering only the signings, or are we considering also the draft picks, and are we considering also the academy signings?
Let's consider everybody who's new to the club, everybody who wasn't in a Rapids uniform for the game against FC Dallas.
Senior Rapids.
Yes.
Man, such a hard question, because to be honest, and this is going to sound like such a homer kind of thing to say, there's so many of these signings I like. I'm going to break it down into three. I have three favorite signings. Okay. My favorite signing, in terms of he's going to make a huge impact on the team in terms of quality is Diego Rubio. I think Diego Rubio is the best pure player that they signed. You don't know much about him as a person, and how he fits into the club. And I honestly, if I'm basing my opinion on the signing of him as if he is a good pure player and the other 10 guys around him will just make it work. Cause I don't actually know if he's going to fit neatly into this system. He was great with Sporting Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City played a really neat possession, attack, and they had a lot of really great supporting players like Johnny Russell, alongside him. So that's a really good question. But nonetheless, my favorite signing is Diego Rubio. From a talent perspective, from a personality perspective, my favorite signing is Kai Kamara. Because Kai Kamara is so much fun, and so ebullient and joyful, and he exudes, I love being a soccer player. And that's the one thing, Matt, that I regret and sad about not being around DSGP this season will be not getting to hang out with Kai Kamara. And the third and final one for me is a retro throwback, which is having Clint Irwin back with the club is great. I'm just super excited. He's very outspoken. It's going to be the beginning this year of them starting to talk about the new CBA between the league and the players. Irwin was not only the player rep for the Rapids back in the day during the last CBA, but he was one of the well-known leaders of the MLS Players Association. He's got a reputation for being outspoken and intelligent.
Had some really fire tweets when the discussion about free agency was going down. He was basically, he was owning Dom Garber on the Twitterverse with all of his arguments.
Right. He's an intelligent person, and he had a really good run with the club. So those are all really good reasons to like all of those signings. And it's kind of amazing that there's, you know, only a couple Jewish players in Major League Soccer, and one of them is Benny Fellhaber, and I didn't mention him, but that's a good reason to like Benny too. So those are all of my favorites. I guess my least favorite signing out of this whole list, I guess, is Nicolas Mesquita. Because I don't think he accomplished very much with Vancouver, and I don't know what exactly his role is going to be. Is he going to be a number 10? Are they going to put him in as a shuttler? Are they going to ask him to kind of play wide? Like, was he the best player that you could get? The criticism I made at the original signing was, when they got rid of Enzo Martinez, he was kind of a dribbly Uruguayan who was about 28 years old, but didn't quite fit with his club. And so they got rid of him and they signed Nicolas Mesquita, a 27-year-old dribbly Uruguayan who doesn't quite fit with his club. So that's my take on Mesquita, is that he's the closest thing the team has to a number 10. We didn't really get that guy. We still don't really have that guy. We're just going to throw other guys into that position and hope it floats. So, all right, Matt, who's your favorite and your least favorite signings from the offseason?
I was going to completely agree with you. I'm all in on the Diego Rubio hype train. I think he has the most upside in terms of a look at, in terms of a, how much did the Rapids give up to get a player? And then what's their potential return on investment if they wanted to sell that player abroad? I think the only player who in the next 2 to 3 years is remotely going to command that kind of interest internationally in the market to Kellen Acosta is going to be Diego Rubio. So, you know, if you tell me Rubio's with the club for the next 5 years and a starter for the next 5 years, awesome. If you tell me he's here for the next 2 seasons and the Rapids are potentially selling him for 6 figures somewhere in Europe or maybe somewhere in South America, awesome. So he fits that role. I think he's going to be absolutely spectacular. I agree with what you said a few minutes ago regarding Diego Rubio being an upgrade over Sam Nicholson. I agree with you on the concern or the hesitation regarding Nicholas Mesquita, not so much for him, the player, but because I'm not really sure that he, you know, his biggest weakness or the thing that undid his time in Vancouver and him being successful on the field in Vancouver is, one, he had a lot of competition for players who were very similar. Carl Robinson liked his dribbly, slightly feisty, number 80, number 10-y winger Central and South American players. But the other thing was, is in Carl Robinson's team style, in the how he liked to play, Mesquita had 3 or 4 positions that he was good at, but not one position that he was great at. There wasn't a single role or an assignment or a position in the starting 11 that he took and said, this is mine, I'm the best at this particular role, in the way that maybe we were hoping that Marlon Harrison was going to seize the right wingback position at the beginning of last season. I'm not sure that Mesquita has that right now in any of the individual positions. So my biggest question, or where I have cause to pause on the Mesquita signing, is looking at Porrick Smith and the coaching staff and thinking, what's the plan for Nicholas Mesquita and how are you going to evaluate that as he progresses in the system, given the team that you've assembled this year and the changes that might be coming up with the 2 open DP slots? So, you know, again, it's not so much him, but it's the signing itself that maybe I have some concerns about because of how it may or may not be handled. Let's move on. Intellectual Wanderer has a question for us. Do you think Bassett and Vines will be played much at the start of the season? Mark, I'll throw it to you.
Vines is a really big question. Bassett's a no. Bassett is, he got some good time at the end of last year, but it's going to be a few weeks or months until we see him regularly on the pitch. If he comes on, it'll be in a relief role at the end of each game. Vines, it really depends on how much the coaching staff has confidence in Declan Wynn or somebody else at left back coming into the season. You know, I think it's really hard to tell what the coaching staff is thinking. They were pretty high on Wynn last year, but we didn't see it. We didn't see it on the field. But that was partially because he played out of position almost all year. If you take the club at their word that he's really a left back. If it's really a straight up open competition for the left back spot, then, you know, I think Vines has a 30% chance, but, you know, I watched a fair amount of his games last season, and, what he can do is get forward and swing in a ball. I mean, he is just an absolute wonderful pinpoint passer. But he's not like absolutely 100% reliable defensively. You know, he's not going to be Edgar Castillo. And I think that that's, something to be aware of. So I put my money on Vines getting more minutes by July than Bassett. But I wouldn't put either player over 1,500 minutes on the year each. And I actually wonder whether either one will break 800.
I think that's a fair statement, Mark. I think one of the biggest and I think the most fascinating questions for the Rapids as we get down the stretch with the next couple weeks of preseason is how they're handling their affiliation with the Colorado Springs Switchbacks in terms of players potentially getting loaned down. They obviously have a couple of academy kids who are in training with the first team right now, but where do the Rapids stand on the position of would it be better for Sam Vines to be training with the first team every single day, get the occasional minute, but only play 600 minutes in all competition in 2019, or would it be better for him to be down in Colorado Springs and walk into the starting 11 as long as he's 90 minutes fit and healthy and eligible for selection? And we've talked about this question in general in terms of what should be the approach for American soccer as a whole or on an individual player-to-player basis, and I'm not sure that we have a clear indication of what that answer is going to be. I think in either case, it's going to help the players. I wrote an article and kind of was quiet about it because it wasn't a real headline for Last Word on Soccer a couple weeks ago about Anthony Hudson's approach in 2018 to dealing with Nicky Jackson and kind of his hot start, cooling down, and then a good way to end the season. And then Cole Bassett, kind of coming in with a whole lot of fanfare, but then Hudson saying, yeah, he's a really good player, but he has to earn it. And I think both of those were healthy exercises for those players. So as long as the Rapids have a plan and there's open communication with that player, I'm confident, or I have faith in whatever decision that the brain trust in at DSG Park and by extension Fortress Sand Creek down in Colorado Springs are doing in terms of those players. I agree with you if I had to put the over-under on the number of minutes that both Cole Bassett and Sam Vines are going to get individually this season, it'd probably be at like 700, 800. And I might, ask me in a couple weeks, I might be slightly optimistic to take the over, but not by much. I'd be surprised. It would have to take a massive injury or a huge coup by one of them in terms of just bossing it in training, I think, for either of them to crack 1,000 minutes. Moving on, we have a question from Purple Rocks. He has a couple questions. I'll throw the first one to you, Mark, and then I'll take the second one. So one, what should our expectations for year two in the Hudson era be? Mark, what are you expecting in the progression and evolution of Anthony Hudson as a coach in Major League Soccer?
Is this question, will he succeed, or is this question, don't answer that, Matt. Is this question whether he will evolve? I hope he gets a sense of the league. I hope he gets a sense of the things that are different that one needs to prioritize between coaching a national team and coaching a club team, and specifically coaching a club team in Major League Soccer. And I think also, there was definitely some growth between last year and this year. The major senses of growth are that, his somewhat inflexible tactical system that relied on wing backs, he needed to evolve out of. And once he did, things went better. And also, he had a big bumpy patch with one player and he needed to evolve past that. So if he's got his men on his side, if he's got a formation and he's willing to not stick to it if it doesn't work, but to evolve, then I think we'll see him settle in better and potentially have a pretty solid season where, he'll be sniffing the playoffs and the fan base will be happy and the ownership will be happy. But it's still a question as to whether he has learned a lot from his first season, which was bumpy.
And then Purple Rocks' second question, compared to the Western Conference, do the Rapids match up and should playoffs be realistic? I'll totally give away the lead that I have for the preview article that I'll be writing sometime in the next 2 weeks about the Rapids season. I guess my reasonable expectations, and I think the goal that the Rapids should have for 2019, Mark, is simply be competitive for a playoff spot. No expansion teams joining the Western Conference, so you still have just the 12 in the Western Conference, but now with the new playoff format, there are 7 teams that are going to make the playoffs, so there's one extra spot that's available. With everything that's going on in Vancouver, I think they're taking a step backwards this season in order to take 2 steps forward next year. Minnesota's obviously going all guns blazing. San Jose, for me, has been slightly quiet this offseason given Matias Almeida, but maybe he's taking the slow approach to it. But at the same time, you know, FC Dallas is kind of going full in on the youth movement. So similar to Vancouver, you know, they might be willing to play some young kids, have them take a couple knocks before they really start to progress as professional players. So I think there is room to compete. You know, I don't know that RSL is much better than they were last season. I don't think the Houston Dynamo have done a whole lot. You know, I know there were some rumblings about La Pantera, Albert Elise, a couple of weeks ago. But I think, you know, that the competition for, you know, I would say, you know, it's Sporting Kansas City, it's LAFC, who else is up there? You know, I'd put the Galaxy in kind of the upper echelon. You know, there's four or five teams competing for those top ones, for those top opportunities. And then there's kind of a crushed beer can in terms of all the other teams that are going to be competing for that sixth and seventh and then the last man out role. And I think with what the Rapids have done this offseason, they've absolutely catapulted themselves into that conversation. So, you know, if I had to arc it out, I would say, with one calendar month left to go in the season, the Rapids should still be, you know, the 538 should still have a reasonable percentage chance that the Rapids make the playoffs. And I would say with at least two games left in the season, the Rapids should not be mathematically eliminated from competing for the playoffs. I think making the playoffs would absolutely be, you know, meeting and surpassing the expectations. But at least for me, I want to see with all the lessons that they learned and everything that went wrong last season, that they've made progress to the point where they're learning. Given the age of some of the key players that they have, it's playoffs or bust, and anything less, regardless of how it comes about, is considered a failure. But I want to see an evolution from a tactical standpoint. Can Jack Price be one of the top five registas in the league? Can Kellen Acosta have a successful season? How does the forward core end up shaking out? If we see it to the point where progress is made and the team is heading in the right direction, add a really good number 10 and a really good number 9 DP signing, and this team should expect and should make the playoffs and be in win now mode in 2020. I just want to see that they're so far are a, I just want to see that they've been connecting the dots from A to B, so that when 2020 comes, they can get to point C and ultimately make the playoffs and actually be relevant in Major League Soccer in 2019. Moving on to our last hashtag AskHTHL of the night, Mark. This one comes from our good friend Jeff Casimir. And Jeff asks, is the organization in a fundamentally different place than it was a year ago? Will that make a difference on the field? Kind of similar to what we got from the last question asking about Hudson's evolution. Has the club as a whole evolved from one calendar year ago today, Mark?
I think it's... So club could be translated there as front office and management versus the players on the field. So I'll take it that way, which is like, they brought in two management folks last year. Horik Smith, who wasn't brought in, but he was elevated. And, Wayne Brandt, who is the vice president for KSC, who oversees the Rapids, which was a restructuring considering the team used to have, an actual president of the Rapids. And I don't see much evolution in the sense of the club has a different approach to the way they look at building a team. There still isn't a third DP. Nobody gets to fly off to meet with Stan Kroenke or Josh Kroenke and say, hey, everybody else is spending an obscene amount of money in this league. What are we doing? Right? Like there wasn't a quantum leap forward. There's no doubt about that. What there was an understanding, I think, by a couple folks of incremental change is possible, and you can win in Major League Soccer without blowing out, you know, your spending too much. That being said, like someone, I complained about the Rapids spending this past week on Twitter, and someone called me to task and said, like, didn't the Rapids rank 10th in Major League Soccer last year in spending? And the answer was, yeah, they just didn't spend very well. So the one evolution I will say is that it looks like from the offseason that the team has figured out how to spend better. But we won't see a real quantum leap forward until the team either make some really interesting DP signings next year, or whether the team fills out that third DP slot.
I agree with you, Mark. I think I was having a conversation with one of my other good soccer friends in terms of, I think in MLS 3.0 there are two types of franchises, there are two types of clubs that every single club should be aspiring to be. I think there's the, you know, what in 3 years ago we might have called the LA Galaxy, Seattle Sounders model. What we now, I think, the Atlanta United is the standard bearer in that of being, we're going to be a big team with a big stadium. We're going to spend big on the international market, and you know, we're going to have a bunch of these big international personalities, and we're just going to try, you know, we're going to do something big with a new tactical IP and approach and be all about that. And the other side of, we're not going to spend a whole lot of money, but we're going to be smart and we're going to optimize everything else about what we're doing as a club. You know, we've yet to see Mile Robinson really kick in with Atlanta United. They don't really make a big deal about the draft. I hesitate to criticize Atlanta and really any of the recent MLS expansion teams on the homegrown front, just because the club hasn't been around long. It's harder to get the academy system set up and, you know, have kids go from U14 to 16 to 18 to then potentially into, you know, the first team or a reserve team. But, you know, then the other approach is the Sporting Kansas City side of things, where we're not going to spend a whole lot of money. We are going to sell when we have the opportunity to make a profit and reinvest that into the club. We saw that with Uri Rossell. We saw that with Dominic Dwyer. You know, if you leave money on the table and it's more than market value of how much Peter Vermees values a particular player, he's going to listen, and more often than not, he's going to be willing to move that player on, as long as then he can use that money and then invest it somewhere else to improve the team. So Sporting Kansas City doesn't spend a whole lot of money, but how many times have we seen them have an absolute bust in terms of their big money player? You know, when he was healthy, Gutierrez was excellent for them this past season. Johnny Russell was absolute dynamite for them. Obviously, they've spent big money on their back line, and that's, you know, that's have been a big part of their dynasty, whether it was in goalkeeper, what they did with, you know, the re-upping of Roger Espinosa, Graham Zusi, and Matt Beisler last year. And when they don't re-sign one of those guys, they sell Eichel Parra to Minnesota United and make $1 million in allocation money. So being smart on the transfer market, spending wisely but not necessarily spending big, and then using your draft picks well. Graham Zusi and Eichel Parra were, Graham Zusi and Matt Beisler were both super draft picks for under Peter Vermees, and then also doing good things with your academy, what they've done with Swope Park Rangers, producing guys like Gianluca Busio, and then when they have an opportunity to move one of their homegrown kids for a profit, they're going to go about doing that. So, you know, those are the two clubs that if you're trying to spend big money, have three DPs, spend multi-million dollars on expansion, on not expansion drafts, excuse me, on transfer fees, look at the Atlanta United model and try to mimic that. If you are not going to spend a whole lot of money, not have three designated players, not spend big in the international transfer market, look at what Sporting Kansas City is doing and try to be that. Obviously, anybody who's listening to this knows that the Rapids are way closer to potentially being Sporting Kansas City than they are Atlanta United. So, but looking what we've seen from them in the last 12 months, we started to see them bear fruit in terms of what they're doing with their homegrown signings. And, you know, we've seen that that process has gotten a lot better, as I spoke about with Brian Crookham on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And that's just only getting started in terms of, you know, that well being open and potentially, you know, them reaping the benefits from that. We've seen them continuously be effective in the draft in terms of acquiring players or acquiring assets. They drafted and developed Dominic Baggi. That then allowed them to turn that into Kellen Acosta. You know, Marlon Harrison was a gold soldier for the team. They got some cash for him when, you know, who knows how much he would have been worth as a raw non-generation Adidas kid coming out of college. You know, it was Nicky Jackson last year. It was Andre Shinyashiki this year. They've gotten usable parts, usable assets that either they can move on or develop from within and get good production out of within the first team. Where they haven't really had a whole lot of success is spending marginally on international players. You know, Tommy Smith was okay last season. You know, I think most of the people listening to this probably like Jack Price. We don't need to talk about the forwards. Obviously, Skelshengashi hasn't been healthy. There's a whole host of reasons why spending a DP slot on a goalkeeper doesn't make sense in MLS. And I think there are some real questions about whether or not those two signings that they make potentially come January 2020 are going to be successful given the track record for the club and how much money we know that they won't be spending. And the fact is, you're looking at a very different player if you're spending 1 to 2 million on a transfer fee, 2 to 3 million on a salary, compared to Atlanta United dropping 8 million on Miguel Almiron and then giving Jose Martinez, rightfully so, a massive raise to be one of the highest paid strikers in Major League Soccer. So, you know, Jeff, is the club in a fundamentally different place than they were last year? No. Have they optimized a lot of processes that weren't really efficient? Yes. Have they gotten better at doing things that they were doing okay at? Yes. Are there some things that now we can say fundamentally they're doing a good job of, and potentially if they continue to make progress, they will do those things at a level that Sporting Kansas City is doing? Yes. Is there anybody in the Rapids organization individually or the Brain Trust collectively that I think is as smart, as savvy, as calculated, and borderline like evil, conniving genius as what Peter Vermes has been with Sporting Kansas City basically since 2013 when they won MLS Cup? Right now, I would say evidence would suggest to that being no. So you can aspire to be Sporting Kansas City. You can move to try and catch them. Right now, I don't know even if they continue on this track that they're ultimately going to catch them in that respect. So, I mean, you're looking at a team that if a couple results go right, they might be able to make a run at the Open Cup and they're going to be competitive for the playoffs. But I don't know that they're really in a position right now to ultimately, in the Hudson era, become a regular contender for trophies or an extended period of time or really add to the hardware in addition to the 2010 MLS Cup.
Yeah, I think you really kind of filled that out very well, especially at the end, by clarifying that no matter how much development or change or strides the team has made structurally or in planning or in terms of making good choices, the league just keeps getting better, and it's just a very, very difficult thing to make that jump to the playoffs. So we'll see. We'll see. It's a good question.
All right, that's all the stuff that we have to knock it. Shall we get out of here, Mark?
Let's get out of here.
All right, listeners, you can follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our written, audio, etc. content for me at lastwordonsoccer.com. Mark does a lot of great USL stuff for Pittsburgh Soccer Now. Mark, are you ready to announce the future home of Backpass in 2019?
No, I am not. I have to put my signature on a thing, and then it's not going to get buried at the end of the show when only the really cool kids are still listening. It's going to go up front in the bants. So I want to put that down, and I can't reveal it, but it looks like Backpass is going to be back and bigger and better than ever.
Fantastic stuff. Follow us on Twitter collectively, the podcast, at Rapids96Podcast. You can email us your hashtag AskHTHLs that are longer than 280 characters at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. We're in pretty much every podcatcher that you could possibly want us to be on. We will see you next week, hopefully with some interesting interviews to finally kick off the end of preseason before we actually get into talking about the Rapids playing soccer in an MLS league game. We'll see you then.
Peace.